Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality continuing education and professional development for all UK-registered optometrists. You can gain one CET point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. I'm Michelle Hanratty. I'm an IP optometrist based in Birmingham and an examiner for the college's scheme for registration. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we're exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. 18 months after a national lockdown was announced, the COVID-19 pandemic is not yet over. Restrictions were lifted in July despite a steep rise in reported infection and hospitalisation figures. With winter on the horizon and traditional respiratory viruses of cold and flu adding to the situation, infection control has never been more important. In this episode, we'll outline the principles of infection control with Dr. Conor Meehan, a microbiologist.
We need to not just protect the patients, but protect each other and protect ourselves. Continuing with hand washing, wearing masks, these will go a long way to helping us, in general, keep infections down.
And later on, we'll speak to Arijit Mitra, a consultant ophthalmologist from the Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust.
It started with just redness and watering in my left eye. And then within about 2 days, it spread to the right eye.
Mr. Mitra was inadvertently infected by a viral conjunctivitis whilst at work.
The lids were swollen. So at that point, I asked one of my colleagues to have a look. And they said that the left eye was really badly infected.
We'll explore the consequences and precautions that could be taken to minimise the risk of this happening. But first, several years ago, I was working with a minor cold, but a patient that I had seen was convinced I had given her the flu. Luckily, it seemed that I was not the cause of this patient's illness, but the experience shows that infection control measures are incredibly important to protect yourselves, your colleagues, and your patients. With me to discuss the mechanisms of infection transmission in an optometrist environment is Dr. Conor Meehan. Conor is an expert in infection control in healthcare settings and an assistant professor in molecular biology at the University of Bradford. Thanks for joining me, Conor.
Thanks very much for having me.
This complaint that I had with a patient was about flu. How is flu typically transmitted, and is it any different to, say, the common cold?
So all respiratory pathogens are going to transmit via normally one of three routes at least. We have contact. This is either between people and other people or between people and surfaces, which we would then call fomite transmission. We also have droplets, which are large airborne particles. They're short-lived, maximum about 20 minutes, and it's transmitted through close contact between people, so this 2-meter rule. And then we have aerosols, which are small airborne particles. They live in the air for a very, very, very long time. And that's more longer range contact, potentially across a room or being carried down hallways. The rate at which a pathogen can transmit via these routes differs between them. So rhinoviruses, they're one of the main viruses we see for colds. They are mainly transmitted via contact and aerosols. Influenza is mainly droplets and aerosols, so not so much through contact. And then the SARS-CoV-2, which is what's causing COVID-19, it's mostly through droplets and aerosols, so not as much contact as we thought.
What are the best ways of avoiding transmission of respiratory pathogens?
So we have to think exactly about how they're being transmitted, so it's a little bit different for each of them as we've seen, but covering those three bases is what we're looking at: droplets, aerosols, and contact. We have to remember that masks essentially stop droplets and aerosols. They're stopping a person who is infected from spreading to others more so than them stopping somebody catching it. But a well-fit face mask can also do protection in the other direction. Another one to think about is ventilation. That removes droplets and aerosols from the air, replacing it with fresh air. And that helps to protect everybody. And then with surface cleaning and hand washing, that's best for stopping the spread of contact, which is not as many different respiratory pathogens as people might think.
So, Conor, based on a typical optometrist room, perhaps not a very big room, probably not great ventilation, and you're one-on-one with a patient, there was a recommendation of having, say, a maximum of 15 minutes in that room with that patient. What do you think about that now?
So transmission is about how long you're interacting with somebody, how much ventilation there is, airflow, and how close you are sitting to that person. So short amount of time when you're very close to each other, and the further away from each other you can be, the longer you can spend with somebody. With these kind of examinations, 15 minutes is a good way to think about it, but it's also practically you don't want to put the patient at risk because you're trying to rush through things. So there's a trade-off in both directions with no perfect answer. The perfect answer is fantastic ventilation, but the practical answer is ask the questions that are necessary and then perhaps in a more open space, do the more exploratory questions.
And the college have also advocated needs-based testing during the pandemic as well, which has made things much clearer for optometrists. Do you think that our experience of COVID-19 will change the way we deal with respiratory viruses in general?
I think the pandemic has really woken us up to how some basic changes to our interactions and practice can have a huge difference. Wearing masks alone when we're out in public has made a massive difference on those transmissions. And we see that it's brought down the rates of all the different respiratory pathogens. So masks and ventilation work for basically all respiratory pathogens in some way.
So just thinking forward to working in the winter season, if an optometrist has a cold or has cold symptoms, should they avoid going to work because patients might not actually like being seen by someone who visibly looks like they've got a cold?
I think it's not just with optometry. I think it's something to normalize for all people. Is adopting the practice of if I've got any kind of symptoms like a cough or sneezing or a runny nose, when you leave the house, wear the mask. The worst that can happen is you were wearing a mask. The best that can happen is that you stop transmitting to somebody else. Workplaces, if possible, should be investing in ventilation to ensure that even if an optometrist or a customer is sick, droplets are going to be removed from the air.
And do you think flu vaccinations will be even more important this year?
I think flu vaccinations have always been important and we haven't really thought about them that way. I love a vaccine, so I'm happy to get my flu vaccine every year. I used to work at an Institute of Tropical Medicine. We have HIV positive patients coming in, so I don't know who I'm going to be in contact with. And if I give the flu to them, it's really, really bad. We have to think about not just ourselves, but protecting the people that we're coming in contact with. And in optometry, obviously, you have an aged population. You have young population in terms of children. These could all be much more susceptible. So it's not just about protecting ourselves with flu vaccinations and COVID vaccinations. It's also about protecting the people that we're coming in contact with.
Yes, and then there's the boosters as well, isn't there? So when the COVID-19 boosters become available, it is important for optometrists to take that up, isn't it?
Yes, I think COVID is going to be our new seasonal booster. It's going to be get the flu jab, get the COVID jab. It'll be more difficult because it's not going to be free forever, just like we see with the flu one. But I think when we are thinking about frontline workers, optometrists should be thinking about that as well in terms of having those vaccinations to protect themselves and the people around them.
To help prevent transmission of respiratory infections, face coverings are still going to be really important. But it is a balancing act, isn't it? As patients don't really like wearing them, they can impair communication. And last but not least, they can cause lenses to steam up. So is there anything that we should be particularly mindful of when we're wearing masks or deciding whether to wear a mask?
If you are wearing a mask, wash your hands, then put on the mask. Try not to touch it once it's on. Much easier said than done. If you're going to touch it, back of the hand is a better way to do it than with your fingers. Some masks do have a metal shapeable nose piece, which can help with preventing air escape and fogging. It's not always perfect. It's very specific to nose shapes as well. So that can also be an issue. We have to remember that normally face mask wearing, you have a fit test on that in a healthcare setting. If you're going to be wearing them a lot, it maybe is not a bad idea to try to get a fit test and have a mask that's really shaped to your face, and that will really help you. The other side is we can't ask patients to wear it if they don't want to, so it's trying to protect yourself. The better the mask is fit to your own face, the better it will protect you from transmission from other people.
That's respiratory viruses, but there are other types of infection too. So the dreaded vomiting and diarrhea bugs, for example. What principles of infection prevention and control need to be applied there?
So going back to the routes of transmission, the droplets, the aerosols, and the contact, it's the contact that we're thinking about there. So if we think about E. coli, eating contaminated food, or it can be fecal to oral transmission, which most people don't want to think about. But it's not directly eating feces or something. It tends to be somebody is sick, that goes to a surface, and then that gets picked up from the surface and onto the person. So that's about good hand washing with gels or anything like that, depending on the bug. Not touching your mouth when you are interacting with other people as well.
So if a member of staff is ill with a vomiting bug, how long should they stay at home?
This hasn't changed since prior to the pandemic. You know, if you're infectious or too sick to work, then you just shouldn't be there.
And I know a lot of people do work with policies where they have to stay off work for 48 hours after the last vomiting or diarrhoea episode. So that makes perfect sense.
Yes, you could still be infectious, meaning you don't have the symptoms, but you might still be shedding. So it's good to have a couple of days in between.
So the infection risks that we've talked about already are everyday encounters. But let's move on to something that's a lot less common, CJD. And that radically changed the way we approach the reuse of equipment in optometry, i.e. the equipment that touches the patient's eye. So, for example, tonometry prisms and reusable contact lenses. So just how infectious is CJD?
So CJD is what's called a prion disease. It's not actually a virus or a bacteria. It's a weirdly misfolded protein. When it comes in contact with other proteins of the same type, which are found in the brain, it misfolds them and then causes the disease that way. So to pass from one person to the other, it needs to be done through tissue-to-tissue contact of infected tissue, which can be cornea, but mainly is actually brain-related things. So you're looking at neurosurgical instruments, contaminated tissue transplants, which is rare but can happen. So when you're working with these kind of things, surgical sterilization is the key. Now, we do mostly see this in surgery, not outside of surgery. But in general, it's about good infection control around reusability, as you said, and sterilization of equipment.
And have there actually been any cases of transmission through ophthalmology or optometry that you're aware of in the UK?
Not that many in the last decades. In 2018, there was, I think, maybe about 40 or 50 cases in the world. So it is not that common, but it can happen. Mainly it's, as I said, surgical corneal transplants and things like that, where you're seeing it more so than day-to-day optometry, because you're not going into the tissues that are infected as much. It really is brain-related.
Okay. And as far as specific things that optometrists should do, you've already mentioned that surgical sterilisation is key, but the college has actually got specific advice on the reuse of contact lenses and ophthalmic devices. And they also say that you should follow local infection control protocols.
I think it's always important to talk to your local infection people. They know a lot about what is necessary. And even if you think that your practice is high street and so front line that it's not important, I think what we see now from the pandemic is everything that's patient facing has to think about infection control to some level.
And finally, there's a risk of optometrists either catching an eye infection from a patient or passing it on to another patient. How can we prevent this?
So eye infections can come from things like an adenovirus, which is another virus that causes the common cold. That can cause a lot of conjunctivitis, if you think about that. So there's a link there in terms of the respiratory viruses and eyes. And the main route there is hand to eye. So a good way to minimize that risk is if you need to touch your own face, you do it with the back of your hand closest to the wrist and never with your own fingers. Hand washing is very important, or at least using hand gels, which will also stop the vast majority of virus and bacteria transfers. And here we're not just talking about rubbing between the palms. It has to also be back of the hands, up to the wrists, trying not to wear anything below the elbow. And that will really protect you from any infections that they might have.
So, Connor, we're in a typical consulting room here. So how should hands be washed?
So first, you're starting off with wetting your hands, preferably with hot water. Applying enough soap then to cover all of the hand surface. You want to rub your hands palm to palm. Right palm over left of the back of the hand. Interlace your fingers and go back and forth, and then do it on the other way. Then palm to palm with your fingers interlocked, go up and down and side to side. Cup your hands, back of fingers to opposing palm, fingers interlocked and go up and down. Clasp your left thumb in your right palm and rotate. Do it the other way around. Rotational rubbing then, you're going, taking the tips of your fingers into the palm of your hand and going back and forth, and then rinse the hands. Then dry your hands and use a towel to turn off the faucet.
Okay, so that was washing using soap and water, but quite often we use hand gel as well, and it's not really adequate to do a quick squirt and a quick rub like you do in the supermarket, is it?
It's good practice to use hand washing when you're visibly soiled hands and hand gel in between the patients. But my suggestion there is also to do a similar technique to what we'd said there. Rub it in between the palms and the fingers on the front and on the back, and then around the thumbs and the fingertips. So trying to make sure you're covering the same areas you would if doing hand washing.
Excellent advice. Thank you. And we do have a video demonstration of hand washing, so we will put that on the Docket website, available for you to view from the course page. So that brings me on to gloves. When do you think it's necessary to put gloves on? And if you are wearing them, when should they be changed?
So there's very few times when a glove is really needed, but it can put a lot of patients at ease. There's a fine line between ensuring you're putting the patient at ease and actually misusing or feeling too safe from wearing gloves. So gloves don't really minimize infection, as the bacteria or virus can sit on the outside of the glove. Gloves are for stopping the person wearing them from being infected by something else. So if somebody has an infection in their tear fluid, wearing gloves can be good to stop you getting infected. If the gloves are not changed as regularly as the person would wash their hands, they're essentially useless because they'll just pick up the same bacteria, etc., on the outside. So gloves are there for potential body fluid transfer, such as cuts and abrasions that might be on the wearer's hands or on the person you're touching's hands. But you do have to wash your hands before and after you use the gloves.
So really, best practice is to put the gloves on just before you touch the patient and take them off immediately after you've finished examining the patient, before you touch anything else.
Yes, that's important. Don't touch yourself with the gloves or any surfaces, because you'll forget that you touched those surfaces with the gloved hand, and later you'll touch it with a non-gloved hand, and that's not going to work for you.
And I always wipe down the headrest and the chin rest of equipment in between patients. How important is that for preventing infection?
I think we've gotten quite used to wiping down everything that the patient has been touching, that it's not a bad idea to continue with that. I think any regular equipment that's being used, like forehead rests or something like that, where another patient will be in very close contact, or especially if their face will be in very close contact, that is important. I don't think the handles of slit lamps and things are as important, but when the patient's face or your face are coming in contact with, I think it's still good practice to wipe those down.
Thank you. And finally, Connor, what is the most important point for optometrists to remember?
We need to not just protect the patients, but protect each other and protect ourselves. Continuing with hand washing or gel use, wearing masks if somebody has the sniffles, is sneezing or has a cough, these will go a long way to helping us in general keep infections down, not only in optometry, but in every setting.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we'll be exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists, and that's where we want to hear from you. If there's a topic you want us to cover, or have a fascinating case you want to share, email us podcast@docket.info or tweet @soundoptometry. Infection control is not just theory. There are risks in real practice. Arijit Mitra is a consultant ophthalmologist at Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust. Arijit was infected with viral conjunctivitis, which may have resulted from contact with a patient. We spoke to him as part of our episode on cataracts, but today we're going to explore the situation around the infection that led him down that path. Hello, Arijit. Thank you for joining me.
Hello, Michelle.
Can you talk me through how you think your infection may have occurred?
Well, this started 2 to 3 years ago, long before we knew about COVID-19. What happened was I was working in eye casualty, and I must have seen a couple of patients with a viral infection. And it's more than likely that it spread from contaminated slit lamp or contaminated instruments or even the door handle, for example. And that's the commonest way the infection actually spreads. So this is unfortunately an occupational hazard, which every one of us who work in the eye department should be very careful about or take precautions to try and mitigate the risks so that we don't end up with having infection from patients.
Did you ever find out yourself what the causative organism was in your case?
No, because the natural history was such that I was pretty sure that this was a viral infection as opposed to a bacterial infection. So in an acute bacterial infection, you also have redness and watering, but you have more like yellowish green discharge. In my case, it was just simple watering and then it spread to the other eye. I also had a small lymph node near my ear, which had come up, although I didn't have any respiratory tract infection or fever, but all the symptoms suggested that this was more likely to be a viral infection. And then in a few days' time, I started having the subepithelial and subepithelial infiltrates, which also goes with the adenovirus.
Yes. What are the common contagious infections that we have to be really wary of in optometric practice besides adenovirus? Are there any others?
So the two most common things are viral conjunctivitis and bacterial conjunctivitis. The symptoms that I had were typical of viral conjunctivitis. And then you have the bacterial conjunctivitis, where patients come with purulent or mucopurulent discharge. And the onset of the condition is very acute. So within 24 hours, they have very red eyes with lots of discharge, chemosis, and it may be that if it's affected the cornea, then the vision might drop as well. So the two are slightly different, but discharge is the main thing that will actually differentiate the type of discharge. So if it's just watery discharge, then it's more likely to be viral. If it's purulent or mucopurulent discharge, then it's more likely to be bacterial.
So it's very difficult to know exactly where the infection may have spread from, because, for example, if a patient has touched their own face or their own eye and then they've touched the door handle, it could have been a transfer from there. So it is very difficult to know for sure.
Absolutely. Just like the COVID virus, I mean, we can speculate who gave you the infection, but actually it's extremely difficult to know where it came from. And therefore, taking precautions is the key.
Yes. And the consequences of your infection in this case were far-reaching, weren't they?
Absolutely. So it started with just redness and watering in my left eye. And then within about 2 days, it spread to the right eye. A couple of days later, I could feel that I couldn't open the eye. The lids were swollen. So at that point, I asked one of my colleagues to have a look. And they said that the left eye was really badly infected. By this time, my vision had also started to drop and I could see epithelial and subepithelial infiltrates. And that's when they asked me to actually start using steroid drops in addition to chloramphenicol drops.
What precautions are normally taken in eye departments to avoid this kind of infection from spreading?
So there are some basic rules that we follow. The first thing is obviously to wash your hands. It's actually washing it carefully so that every nook and corner of the skin is actually disinfected, and clean the instruments. So in particular, the slit lamp, clean everything that you are using. For example, the lens, the 90D, the super field lens that you're using, clean the tonometer head, the surface of the table that we've used, if possible, the keyboard and the computer, and leave it to dry before calling the next patient. In particular, remember that when you're actually seeing patients in the clinic, try and avoid rubbing your eyes after seeing the patients, no matter how much you may have cleaned and disinfected things that you've used.
Yes. And from a patient perspective, is there any particular advice that you give a patient if they've got something that's infectious like a virus?
Yeah. So from a patient perspective, I always tell them what the condition is, explain that it's very likely that it can spread to other family members. And therefore, they should avoid sharing personal care objects such as towels and cosmetics and so on and so forth. The patient also should be careful about washing their hands every time they put in the drops, because obviously, once they're putting the drops in the eye, they're more than likely to have the discharge on their fingers. So they need to wash their hands as frequently as possible and try and avoid contact with other family members as much as possible.
Yes, because quite often when patients put eye drops in, they can actually contaminate the bottle itself.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why they need to do the drops themselves if possible. And if somebody else is doing it for them, then that person needs to wash the hand and be cautious of not rubbing the eyes immediately after.
So having had that experience yourself, has it changed the way you approach infection control within your work environment? Have your personal precautions changed at all?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I was very lucky not to have the same problem in the other eye. Well, it did infect the other eye, but I didn't have the amount of subepithelial and epithelial infiltrates in the right eye as opposed to the left. And therefore, I did not have to use as much steroids as I did in my left eye, which then ended up developing a cataract. So personally, when I see patients today, I would actually wash my hands, make sure I've cleaned all the surfaces. I take more precautions than I've ever before.
Mm. And I suppose you have the heightened awareness to make sure that even though you were doing it before, perhaps you're perhaps just doing it a bit more thoroughly now, you just do an extra wipe just in case. And sometimes, because it becomes almost automatic, you forget whether or not you've done it and you end up doing it twice.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the way forward. I mean, it's better to do it twice. What I do is I wipe down the instruments and start typing up the notes so that it has time to dry up. Once I've finished my notes, I then just have a quick wipe of the keyboard and then call the next patient. So you just need to give it time for disinfectant to work. If you've forgotten whether you've done it or not, just do it again.
Yes. And what do you think is the most important thing for optometrists to learn from your story?
Well, just be careful about these infections. Yes, they are very common, but they can have life-changing consequences, as in my case. So just be careful about the fact that before you know it, you may have the infection in your eye. So personal hygiene, hand washing, cleaning the surfaces, and finally making sure that you don't rub the eye. If you really have to rub the eye, just make sure you wash the hand once again and then rub the eye, but not while you're seeing patients.
Yes. So it's about protecting yourself as well as protecting the patients.
Absolutely.
Arijit Mitra, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. If you would like more information about infection control in an optometrist setting, go to our website, docit.info, and search for Sound Optometry to find the additional reading materials. Listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website will gain one CET point covering standards of practice. Next time, we'll be talking to Mr. Imran Masood, consultant ophthalmologist, about glaucoma. We'd really appreciate it if you help spread the word about the podcast. Tell your colleagues to listen or subscribe to the series so you don't miss an episode. The producer is Jason Hoskin. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.